Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices. Fully guaranteed, there's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. Tristan and I have that SeatGeek app on our phones. It's by far the easiest way we've found to shop for tickets. We can be anywhere with just a few taps, instantly find seats. We used it for a Phillies game late last season. It was tremendous, although Tristan did eat a little bit too much. But SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, listeners to this fine show get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
I did fall down the stairs before a trip, and I was just telling Leo beforehand that I was terrified to get on the plane because I thought my back would lock up.
Okay, that's weird.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
All right, welcome to opening day. It's the Fantasy Focus Baseball on Thursday, March 29th, 2018. Very excited for games to start counting. Hopefully the rain will hold off in some other places so these games can be played. The gang is all here ready for baseball games. Tristan's wearing his, pinstripe Don Mattingly jersey, I believe, right? Looking good.
Actually, I'm wearing my turkey leg t-shirt. I'm literally wearing my turkey leg t-shirt.
Where did I see? Oh, when you were auctioneering at NL Labor in Arizona, you wore a turkey leg t-shirt, which is
sure really weird. It is awesome. When I saw it, I had to have it.
Editorial watchdog Leo Howe has his Carl Crawford throwback jersey on. Is it a throwback if it's only like 10 years old? Or is that a Tanyan Sturts jersey? I can't really tell.
Everything for the Rays is throwback. So, okay. Yes, it is a throwback.
Researcher Kyle Soppy, currently texting Tyler Chatwood, caressing his rookie baseball card. What jersey would you wear, Kyle?
I've actually got a Mark McGuire jersey on right now.
Really?
That's what got me into baseball. Yeah, back in the day. And Chatwood's is on delivery. So
not sure how I feel about that. Okay.
Wait, you don't have one already?
I know. It's been tough times.
And producer Anthony Calatayudas here, and I just don't know which team you like, so please tell us.
I do.
I've got an all-teal Jeff Conine jersey on right now.
Marlins?
Yeah.
He's a Marlins fan?
Miami-born and raised. I mean, what can I do?
I've never met one. It's like a unicorn. This is great.
Oh, ouch. Oh, man.
I've
never met one.
Half of the Florida MLB fandom is represented on this podcast. Yes. Literally, like, all four of the fans were two of them.
You know, awesome. Both teams will win today because that's baseball.
I'm joking. Like anyone cares. Lots to get to on today's show. We'll be previewing the big 11-day week. Hopefully you're all prepared for that, because Monday morning you can tweet us and complain that you can't change the lineups, but there's nothing we can do about it, nor should you. We told you in advance what the rules are. You'll get through it. We'll search for larger predictive themes. Later in the show, we answer your hash browns. Here's the buzz. All right, biggest story right now, I guess it's Salvador Perez of the Royals. Now, Tristan, let me ask you, how many times in your life have you torn a knee ligament lifting your luggage? Now, when we went to Arizona, you had a lot of luggage. You packed for like 3 weeks, even though it was like a three-day trip. So I'm going to guess the over-under for you is 1.5 times you've injured yourself with luggage.
So is it injured or actual tears? Because what you missed in the pre-show notes is I've actually done this.
I have no doubt you have.
I did fall down the stairs before a trip, and I was just telling Leo beforehand that I was terrified to get on the plane because I thought my back would lock up.
Okay, that's weird. So we probably should help people, though. I mean, if you've got Salvador Perez, now it's already probably late for week one, but let's make this a bigger theme, because we're not going to talk about today's games or tomorrow's games. We're a show that goes two times a week. In the bigger picture, there's a knee injury to a catcher. you know, that seems to me to be a problem. Even if he comes back in 4 to 6 weeks, are you going to be concerned that this is going to linger for a couple months? I mean, anytime an injury happens to a catcher, you know, JT Realmuto with his back injury, I'm more concerned than if that was an outfielder, aren't you?
I am, absolutely. I think that they're in addition to this timetable, even in the best case scenario, I think there's probably going to be a little bit of time in major league games where he's going to take some time to get his full swing back, be comfortable with playing the volume he did. The big advantage with Salvador Perez was the at-bats. Among catchers, in terms of guys who get these at-bats from the catcher position, he actually was one of the ones who was competitive with Yadier Molina, usually the AL's version of that, starting and playing roughly 85% of the innings for the Royals. That's kind of extreme, and I don't know if he's going to be ready for that right away.
Yeah, I agree with that. In terms of catchers that you can pick up right now, any names jump out to you? I mean, like in an ESPN league, this isn't a big deal at all. There's plenty of catchers after the top 10. You shouldn't need to you roster a guy for a month. Frankly, I would just stream it based on the schedule. But if you need some aid, Yasmani Grandal's out there, Brian McCann, Jonathan Lucroy, Robinson Chirinos jumps out to me. There's plenty of guys. So here's the question. In an ESPN standard where you only need one catcher, do you keep Perez rostered or do you dump him for one of these other catchers?
I think you're going to have to dump him. I don't race to do it because as long as he's the only guy who's injured and taking up your DL spot, go ahead and stash him there for now. But I think you're going to get a better player, and I think you're going to be in more of a roster crunch with a 3-bench and 1-DL spot, and you're going to have to let him go. So just be prepared for that eventuality. I just can't see how most people are going to get to the point of his return. I like him. I think that his power ceiling is among the better at the position, and he's a lot more valuable compared to replacement, even in the ESPN Standard League. But I feel like there's not enough there otherwise, not enough for batting average, runs, RBI to spend the roster spot. I mean, Austin Hedges could really give you somewhat comparable numbers. The batting average will be lower, but don't you think Hedges' numbers could end up being the same? It's not unthinkable.
I mean, 27 home runs is a lot. I mean, that's what Perez hit last year. He was the number 5 catcher on the full-season player rater. You know, I'm not sure I would have predicted another 27 home runs for him anyway, but I think for like a month, you can find somebody. It's really just, if there was a position in an ESPN league where you needed to lose a player, other than like Gary Sanchez and Buster Posey, this is it. This is the one. You don't want to try to, and saves, I guess.
And I think beyond that, like, the Chirinos would be probably the first guy I would go to. I mean, I'm looking beyond the guys who are, they're available in at least 75% of leagues. I like the Grandal one you threw out there. I think Chirinos, yeah, I think this is a bigger hit to people who have two catchers starting or who are in the deep mix leagues or the AL or NL onlys. I have 2 shares of Perez this year. They're in leagues where I can't replace them for the first week, so that's going to be fantastic. Among those fill-ins, though, what do you think? I'd go ahead and speculate on one of the Orioles catchers, Caleb Joseph or Chance Sisko.
Yeah, I'd take a chance on Chance. I like that. Some closer situations have changed since our last show. I think, today's the day where you would assume that players get placed on the disabled list. Everybody's playing, right? So how can they wait any longer? And, you know, I was thinking about this. It is frustrating for fantasy managers that you can't put a player on the DL last week when you know the player is going on the DL. Like, we knew Ervin Santana was going to miss a month, 2 months. Twins didn't actually put him on the disabled list until Wednesday night, I think. So I was thinking, like, are there ways around this? Now, there's no way around this in the ESPN. Like, we have no control over this. A guy gets an asterisk and we see it. You know, like, we push the asterisk. But, like, would you give your commissioner power over saying, well, we know Santana's going on the DL, so I'll put him there? It just seems like that's too much power to do. And then he could have a bias. He could have the player on his team. I think I'm fine with the way it is. It's annoying. I'm not sure what the solution is. Like, the Dodgers are in no hurry to place Justin Turner on the disabled list because they don't play until whatever time they play there.
Where do you draw the line is the problem. There's precedent that will be used against a commissioner.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to give them that much power.
In other leagues. Yeah. I fully agree. I think that, unfortunately, this is the way that the Major League Baseball roster structure is set up. It's been known every year. We deal with it. You just, you know, try and allow as much flexibility as possible with lineups, transactions, ad drops, and the like up until the first pitch. But the best comp I have here is, besides those, the out for the year thing where you can cut a player and recapture his fab. Hey. Two guys were declared out for the year. Do you remember their names?
No.
Marcus Stroman, Yovani Gallardo. They came back in September.
That's
so
right.
Once you make an exception, you really never know when you're going to be wrong on that and where the guy actually doesn't go on the DL. Remember the Mets were just talking about maybe putting Michael Conforto on the roster as a pinch hitter? What if that happened?
Exactly. I don't want to give – there shouldn't be the power. The solution to this – and we did an auction a couple nights ago with no DL but 6 bench spots. That's the solution. I mean, what is our standard game right now? It's 3 bench spots and 1 DL. Just make it four, a bench. Like, and then people would stop complaining about this because that would probably be the right thing to do, right?
They're going to find ways to complain about something.
But this would solve that problem. We wouldn't have to worry about Conforto actually getting the DL tag if you had four bench spots instead of three or whatever the number is. We would just say, this is the way it is. I would prefer that, frankly, because the DL now being a 10-day DL and shorter than the 15, guys are moving all the time. Just make it a bench and no DL slots. I would like to get rid of DL slots.
Or you could just make it a daily transactions league, in which case the player will lock it as game time, and there you go.
That problem seems like solved. A lot of work.
I understand, but I mean, with that being the standard game here, I think that people, there's probably a good number of people who are willing to do that. So,
Leo, what do you think? Just adding a bench spot and taking away the DL slot? Obviously, nothing's changing for this year, but in a broader spectrum, what do you think of that?
Yeah, we actually had a conversation in the office yesterday about that, and my proposal was, let's up the number of bench spots so that you have to make those tough decisions rather than having them made for you by the somewhat arbitrary decisions of both teams and potentially ESPN Fantasy. Kind of takes the power out of our hands and puts it back into the players.
I mean, I really feel like in a lot of cases, it's just like a paperwork issue. Like there's an intern in the Mets office who's like, I'll get around to it tomorrow. Then he goes out to dinner and then he gets around to it and faxes at 11 o'clock and then Conforto's on the DL. That's really what I think is happening in a lot of these cases. All right, so moving on here. So anyway, the point was Mark Melancon is probably going to start the season on the disabled list for the Giants. Clearly the arm is not right. Last year it wasn't right, so Sam Dyson's going to be the closer there. That just seems ugly to me.
Are you sure?
No, I'm not. Who do you think could be the closer? I think it's going to be Sam Dyson because knowing the way Bochy kind of manages, Dyson got saves last year. I can't imagine it's Hunter Strickland, who really is just like a right-hand specialist, like a Rugi. I mean, do you see someone else there getting saves?
So Dyson has an 11.25 spring ERA, and when I've seen a pitch, has looked pretty darned awful. Strickland, by comparison, was pretty lights out. 7 1/3 shutout innings over 8 appearances. Now,
doesn't
I don't
matter.
Put,
come on,
it matters in the fact that one looked definitively better than the other. I'm going to throw away the ERAs themselves because they're going to narrow together during the regular season. But I think that this could very quickly go to committee. So I'm with you that Dyson's the guy who gets the first chance. But I don't know that he gets the second chance. Do you?
I don't know who's going to get it. But I'm
Tony Watson also is a candidate.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you even bothering? Are you even chasing the situation at all? Does it matter to you? Because that was one of my first thoughts was I have a team that could use, like in an NL only, yes, you add anybody because every save is going to matter there and there's only half the teams. But in a mixed league, I don't care who the Giants closer is. I don't see any Giants guy getting 30 saves now. And you know, we'll get to the Arizona situation in a second. I don't think it matters to me all that much. Yes, I mean, obviously people play in deep leagues, they need to know every last name. I think it's Sam Dyson. I think he's going to be the closer. Do I think he'll keep the job? I think it'll be a mess. He'll give up a lot of stuff. But right now, if you're drafting today, I wouldn't even bother drafting Melancon in a 10 or 12 team league, would you?
I would agree with that, and I've said this many times in our standard game that there are a couple of bullpens that are just flat out avoidable. They are one of the ones that stands out to me. The other one is the Marlins. Those are the two where I don't think you're going to extract much value. Now it's conceivable somebody could over time if Strickland emerged and had better control, then maybe.
Is that because it's a bad team or because of the personnel? Because I think Shane Green can get 25 saves. I think Drew Steckenrider can get 25 saves. Why can't they?
Okay, well, you notice I didn't put Detroit in there. I think Green is kind of interesting. I think that then Ziegler's case, Ziegler just pitches the contact, so if he's the closer initially, not excited. I'm with you on Steckenrider. If Steckenrider emerged as the closer for the Marlins, then I'm on board. But at least the current picture, I just don't see a lot of intrigue in those two particular spots. It's just two this year.
Rest in peace, Rusty Staub. Arizona situation, when the closer was announced as Brad Boxberger, I saw a lot of people saying on Twitter that Archie Bradley will still have more value this season. Do you really believe that? Because if Boxberger is capable of saving 30 games, I mean, let's not mince words here. He can be good. Archie Bradley can be great, too, in a setup role. But if Boxberger gets 25 saves and his ERA isn't like Fernando Rodney, he's going to be more valuable than anything Bradley can produce, don't you think?
The context greatly comes into play. If you're talking about final player rater numbers, I'll take Bradley 7 days a week.
Why? Because he's not going to – Bradley's not. Say Bradley doesn't get even five saves. What if he's Andrew Miller? Andrew Miller can't be more valuable than Cody Allen.
Miller has been more valuable than Cody Allen, and I believe it was 2 years ago he was more valuable without the saves. The calculation – In terms of the ERA, WHIP, and strikeout potential, often does override saves from a player rater perspective. When you're talking about dollar earnings for players, these guys who pitch better in terms of the ratios and the strikeouts are going to finish better and provide you more value. But in fantasy terms, because we have to fill the saves category, it's more important to get Boxberger. So could he get 30 saves? Yeah, I'm on board with that. This very much reminds me of that Indians bullpen that you and I, Eric, always talk about, the one where Borowski was the 5 ERA, 40
yes,
saves closer,
yeah,
and there were better relievers behind him. It really could play that way.
All right, so most saves between Sam Dyson, Brad Boxberger, and Keone Kela. Rank them.
Kela.
Really?
Boxberger and Dyson, and I think it's a pretty noticeable stepladder.
I would take Boxberger first. Texas could do anything. Texas could sign Greg Holland today. Arizona can't.
They could. Yep.
All right. So let me ask.
Why can't Arizona?
They're not going to do that. They have a bunch of guys. They have a good bullpen. Texas has a bunch of question marks. Lindskog's not even active. Alex Claudio, he's already said he doesn't want him closing. So who was the there was a name of a guy who, like, I wasn't even sure was still pitching who might get saves. Let me check and see who
that was. Jose Leclerc?
No, it was somebody who was, like, really off the radar, like a former Ray or something.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, Kevin Jepsen. Kevin Jepsen is still pitching and might actually be their closer. He might actually be the Texas closer right now. So let me ask you this. Roster's locked, okay? Say you're thinking about this at 5 o'clock tonight, all right? The first week, 11 days, it's already locked. Do you make roster moves? Do you drop people and sign free agents, or do you wait until the following weekend? Like, if the first save in Texas does go to Kevin Jepsen, do you add him right away? Because I'll admit, in an 11-day week, I might not make any moves for another week because I think so much can change in that week.
Yeah, I don't think there's a date to do it. I mean, if Jepsen gets the save tonight, then Texas is going to fall into that bin of teams that I would just flat out avoid, at least for now. The only things I would react to over the next, I'd say, 24 to maybe 72 hours is major news like the Perez thing. I'm not going to react to the in-game happenings. Unless there's some very clear, you know, there's some clarity, for example, that Nate Jones closes the first two games for the White Sox and successfully and clearly steps up as the White Sox go-to closer, then I might react. But that's about the only case. Unless something major happens in a game that changes a role or news or something like that. Otherwise, I'm with you. I think it's like a week.
And you know what's going to happen? Like Friday, there's going to be a couple DL guys. Like Ian Kinsler, you know, has the groin problem. They say he's going to be active, yep, but we don't know for sure. And then you're going to be, you know, 10 days or a full week without, you know, a guy.
That forces you to react. But in terms of like in-game happenings that weren't DL or injury related that we knew about,
I benched Nelson Cruz in a league for Kevin Pillar in the league from Tuesday, in the auction league. You know why?
Wow, why?
Well,
I know why, but I
can still change it. I did it because I think Cruz is healthy, but they have 8 games versus the 10 for Toronto.
Yep.
We know, I doubt Cruz plays in the 2 road games at San Francisco, not playing the field with a sore quad. So yep, that's 6 games, and maybe a pinch hitting appearance or two. Aren't they facing Cleveland this weekend? They're facing the 3 big strikeout righties. So, you might think that's crazy, but I think if you look at it, like the competition, the fact that he is hurt, and he's probably going to miss a couple games in San Francisco, Pilar is going to get a lot more at-bats. Isn't that what you're supposed to do, is play a guy like that? Pilar could lead off and get like 20 more at-bats than Nelson Cruz this week. Why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah, if I look at the ratings of those two teams for hitting, yeah, it's substantially better for Toronto. It's an 8 grade for them on the hitting side.
And he faces, I think, 4 of the 10 pitchers that Pilar is going to face are lefties. They face Texas as lefties? I was
4 out of 10. You're correct, yes. And 7 games are at home, and the other 3 are in Globe Life Park. So he's got the ballpark advantage. It feels a little awkward, but I think it's worth considering. The biggest problem I have with the Nelson Cruz schedule is that the best specific matchup I think he'd have of the week would be the Ty Black game in San Francisco, which he's probably not going to start.
Yeah, I mean,
he's going to face Jose Berríos in the Minnesota series to finish the week.
Yeah. And another tough right-hander. I mean, I know people that say, well, I drafted him in the 4th round. Why would I sit him? This is why you would sit him. It makes sense. You have to be objective in your thinking.
Last 11-day week, yeah.
I mean, you know, I might be wrong. We'll find out in 2 weeks. But to me, Pilar seems to me to have a much better chance to put up numbers than Nelson Cruz.
You have to start one or the other, Nelson Cruz or Logan Morrison.
Well, that's different because Morrison's in the same boat as Cruz. He's going to lose games because of the DH. There, I'd probably go Cruz. But yeah. And are they facing any lefties? I haven't looked. I have Logan Morrison in a daily, so I'll just deal with that on a daily basis. But, you know, in an 11-day week, Seems like it's, I mean, look, we're wasting time. People already had to set their rosters. AJ Puck, if you have him in a dynasty league, do you drop him if you need the spot? He's having Tommy John surgery. He's one of the top young starting pitchers in the minor leagues. But now his timetable's been pushed back quite a bit.
I would say yes. I like him. Good prospect. I think in the very, very, very deep leagues, like Eric, you and I have some 30-team leagues where we have full major league rosters, then he absolutely needs to be kept around. However, the read I get on people who are in dynasty and keeper leagues is that they're just not deep enough to justify that spot, and you're probably going to need it for a guy who can help you more sooner.
Do we really have to wait another year for Game of Thrones? That's ridiculous. All right. MLB's opening day schedule is sponsored by our friends at ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Posting your position to job sites and waiting and waiting and waiting for the right people to see it? Well, ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive, so you never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there, and ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs, and listeners to this fine show can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, games have already started, so let's go for bigger themes here. What do you think could happen, let's say this weekend, because we have another show on Monday, that could affect how we view things, that could affect how people trade, how people pick up free agents? Obviously, weather could play a role this weekend. It's March. It's going to be some cold weather. There's going to be some rain and snow, perhaps. Bigger theme, what you might find this weekend that could affect what you think.
So the first thing that comes to mind is the humidor in Arizona. They are going to play 6 straight games at home where there's going to be some quality pitching working in those games that is going to give us a decent read on the leaning of the park. Besides just the Diamondbacks alone having Robbie Ray, Zach Greinke, among others, pitching in those games, you're also going to see some visiting outings by John Gray. You're going to see the Clayton Kershaw one. That's coming on the 3rd on Tuesday. So I think we might get the beginnings of a read as to how much this is going to impact power. I think the 2 preseason games aren't going to be enough. I want to see how the Rockies shake out their first base and corner outfield positions. I think there's a very real possibility that Ryan McMahon is going to see the vast majority of time at first base and Desmond's in the outfield. But the way they play this is really relevant for fantasy just because all of the guys who start at those spots and all the candidates who could start at those spots on any given day are fantasy worthy because of Coors Field. I think definitely in terms of the battles, that one I'm keeping an eye on, and the Yankees. How the Yankees shuffle around their infield to fill in for Greg Bird is another big thing.
I think Brewers and Phillies, obviously, the opening day lineup for the Brewers does have Domingo Santana in it. I didn't realize how bad of a spring he had at the plate. And, you know, it's spring training. It's a very small sample. He's an established player. But when you strike out almost half the time and the team clearly has as depth, I mean, not only could Ryan Braun play the outfield again, he's probably going to demand it at some point if he doesn't like playing first base. They did keep Jesus Aguilar active. They still have Eric Thames, who can play left field as well. Santana has to hit. So what are your thoughts on the Brewers?
I think it's going to be maddening to predict in weekly leagues. I do. I like that Aguiar made the team. That actually, you know, Aguiar is the kind of guy who I could see being a useful Yankee pickup to fill in for Greg Bird. In the meantime, yeah, I think that the fact that Santana had a struggling spring does cast some doubt on his regular role. I mean, even with Kean Broxton in the minors, I've got some concerns about it.
Are we overrating Scott Kingery? Blanket question. And I want Leo to answer this too, because he topped me in the bidding in Tuesday's auction. What do we really expect? Do we really think he's going to play regularly? They have, what, 10 games this first period? Does he start 8 of them? 5 of them? That matters.
They have, let's see, yeah, they've got 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, yep, and they're going to face a lot of Marlins pitching. They get the back end of the Mets rotation, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, so, they get Harvey and Lugo.
I mean,
I'd start him.
I would, too.
Are we really overrating him? I mean, I don't know that we're overrating him. I think we're rating him.
Well, I want to be careful here because, obviously, I could have a bias towards the Phillies. I mean, if this was a Met, I might feel differently. Leo, what was your thinking here? I saw you were big on some Phillies in our auction. That matters. If you think they're going to be good, tell us why. Do you think Kingery bats first or second in the lineup? Do you think he gets regular at bats? Do you really think he will be I mean, I've got him as the number three Phillies offensive player for the season, but I think you can make a case to put him over Carlos Santana as well, not Hoskins. What do you think of Kingery?
Yeah, I definitely think that there is the potential for him to earn regular playing time high in that lineup, especially if the guy he's replacing in the lineup is Cesar Hernandez. He's going to bat high, so that's a guy that it makes a logical replacement that he might bat high. I mean, I think that the upside for Kingery, and not, maybe not even upside, like a reasonable projection is 2020. And that's pretty valuable, especially because, like, I admit that there's probably a bit of it where you get caught up in the shiny new toy upside thing, but I do think that there's real possibility for someone who can contribute across several categories, and that's just not something that there's a lot of out there. So, yeah, between him and Hoskins, like you said, I was also pretty high on him in our auction. I just feel like there's a lot of upside and potential there that if I'm going to go the extra buck on some players, I'd rather it be someone who has that ceiling.
Kingery's the most added player in ESPN leagues over the past week, but it's really only happened in the past couple of days. Kingery or Ronald Acuna, you have one bench spot. Doesn't it have to be Acuna?
For me, it does, yeah.
That's knowing that he's missing the first 2 weeks.
But I feel like it's only going to be the first 2 weeks.
I think that's
going to influence the projection here, because Kingery might not be an everyday player for this first period, so the role is a little bit in question. So why can we really say that Kingery is going to get more plate appearances between the two of them? The other thing, too, that strikes me about Kingery in terms of us overrating them is, what do you think specifically is going to be the best category? What's his greatest fantasy contribution going to be this year?
Kingery's?
Yeah, I mean, if we're looking at, like, the five standard roto, I mean, I'll tell you, for me, I think it's the steals.
Yeah, I think the steals. I mean, I think he's Pedroia, but with more speed. I think he can hit 20 home runs. I think he can hit 300. It's not a lot of plate discipline, but it hasn't seemed to matter. I just want to be careful. I don't want to overrate the guy. And certainly if he struggles in the first couple of weeks, you know, then don't overrate the situation. I'm looking at the most drop list. You know, people are adding Kingery, Brad Boxberger, Dominic Leone, some of the pitchers that they'll be streaming in and out. Like, you'll add Felix Hernandez for today, and then you'll drop him when he gives up four runs. I see all that happening. I don't see anybody on the most drop list where I say, well, that's just ridiculous. Like, Greg Holland, yes. The games have started. He doesn't have a job. Samardzija, yes. Sal Perez is now on the list. Willie Calhoun, minor leaguers that haven't made the team, although you might regret it when he comes up. David Dahl, same thing. Some closers that may or may not be getting saves. Like, I don't know if Blake Parker's saving their first win. You're dropping him. He's owned now in only 50% of leagues. I think that might be a mistake. Greg Bird, I agree. I don't like how that's going. Alex Cobb, you know, he's not going to pitch, what, the first week, I guess, but he's still the same pitcher. Lance Lynn, too. I mean, why are you dropping Lance Lynn? He hasn't even pitched yet. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm not sure why Lance Lynn. I'm not sure why Blake Parker, because I do think there's at least 50-50 odds Parker gets the first save chance. I'm very puzzled by the Felix Hernandez being among the most added.
I don't
get it.
I think people are just doing it.
Why would you start him today?
I wouldn't start him today. But let me ask you this. Let's go through a couple pitchers here as we run out of time in the first half of the show. If they don't pitch well, do you drop them? Now, obviously, it's an overreactive fantasy world as it is. Cole Hamels, drafted as the number 49 starting pitcher on average this season. Strikeout rate really dropped last year. ERA was high. I have concerns about him. I don't like the fact that And even the situation, like they wanted to go six man and he was whining about it. I don't like anything here, but he's facing Houston. Probably gave up some runs today, depending on when you listen to this. Do you just drop Hamels after this outing?
I'd consider it, because I think in our standard game, he's already in the streaming class. He's a perfectly adequate starter who's got the durability volume advantage. But beyond that, the walk rate was up over the past couple of years. That's a major concern. His stuff isn't quite as sharp as it used to be. I feel like you're probably going to need that spot to pick a matchup's fill-in tomorrow.
My God, one of my leagues, there's been 30 emails in the past 10 minutes to decide an issue with activation.
Love those!
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Let me guess. Was it about DLs?
No, it's not, actually. It's not about DLs. Wow. It's about how, like, it was set up. It's not on ESPN. And, like, somebody had an injury that happened after the draft, and they can't make it active for the first week. And I'm like, oh, my God, just figure it out already. They might even skip the first week now, which I don't want to do, but I probably shouldn't say that out loud. John Gray at Arizona tonight. I think he's past the streamer stage, right? This is a road game. But say he doesn't pitch well at Arizona. Do you cut him?
Do I cut him?
No, I mean, obviously, it's context. Who do you pick up for him? But
right. And because of the Coors Field thing, the fact that people are going to most likely use his road starts to road start. Yeah. I get it. I wouldn't do it just because I feel like he looked very good during the spring. I felt like he was throwing a little bit more effectively. The command numbers were pretty solid. The ERA was a little sketchy, but that's the Cactus League thing. The ERAs tend to be a little inflated.
Who's on the hot seat this weekend? Like, are there other pitchers here? I mean, Aaron Sanchez at home against the Yankees. There's a lot of buzz. It's almost like Kingery buzz for Aaron Sanchez. Oh, I forgot about him. He's really good 2 years ago. If Aaron Sanchez doesn't pitch well at home against the Yankees, that changes everything. It shouldn't. Blake Snell at home against Boston. And I think a second outing is against Boston as well. Like, I hate saying that, like, these guys need to pitch really well in their first outing because it's just one outing. But, like, people are going to overreact to that. I don't know.
No, I see what you mean on those. I mean, they're going to definitely tell us some things about them based on how they perform. The other ones I would throw into that, I think David Price's game in Tampa is pretty important to tell just how much he's recovered this year. I think that's one I'm definitely keeping an eye on. How the A's shake out some of their back-end rotation spots between guys like Daniel Meng and Andrew Triggs. Are they going to be potentially streamer candidates for you? We mentioned Hamels with Texas. I mean, Texas's rotation is that big mess around Hamels pitching every fifth day. Is Mike Minor a good starting pitcher on Sunday? He faces Houston at home. How is he going to be in terms of a starting role as opposed to relief?
Sunday night baseball, actually Sunday day and night baseball, Sunday, April 1st. Happy Easter to everybody. The day games at 1:10 Eastern time, Luke Weaver and Steven Matz. You love Luke Weaver, man. I've seen you in our leagues just going crazy for Luke Weaver. I can't say you're wrong until we see what he does, but there's obvious upside there. The night game is, oh boy, Chris Stratton and Rich Hill, Giants and Dodgers, at least in that tie block. Stratton is actually one of my sleepers. I want to see how he does. I think there's some upside there. Coming up after this, we've got the Hash Browns with Kyle. Today's Hash Browns are brought to you by Hims. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. Thing is, when you start to notice hair loss, it's often too late. It's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost. The solution here, forhims.com. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness, all for men. And thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. No snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements. Prescription solutions backed by science. No waiting room, no awkward doctor visits. Save hours by going to forhims.com. It's really is so easy to look and feel your best. Answer a few quick questions online and a doctor will review and prescribe what you need to give you that confidence boost you've been needing. Products are shipped directly and discreetly to your door with no hassle. Guys, this is an emerging company, helps guys get the products they need, ones that are often too uncomfortable to talk about. So be realistic. Stuff happens. Be ready to act. I know I would be as well. Order now. Fantasy Focus listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or pharmacy. So go to forhims.com/FFB. That's forhims.com/FFB. forhims.com/FFB. All right. I think we need some hash brown wellness here.
How about it? Well, I got what you're looking for here. Jack wants to know, would you rather have Ryan McMahon or Mitch Haniger for the season, and what can we expect from McMahon given that he's available in over 80% of ESPN leagues?
Did we overrate Haniger last year when he had a great April, Tristan? Because he didn't play. He got hurt after that. Didn't have great numbers. He batted second last April. I don't know what Mitch Haniger is. Is he the 25-homer guy that we thought he could be? Or is he just an ordinary guy who bats sixth and hits 260 with 20 home runs and has multiple DL stints a year?
I think the goal for us was that he got the 25 homers, batted somewhere in the range of 270-ish, and contributed steals. I think that was the real sleeper, you know, upside part that we were banking on. He was talking about doing that too. The issue I have with Haniger is the injuries. I hope he can stay healthy, and that's not going to be a recurring theme for him. But I'm a believer. I feel like that 25 homer ceiling is still there, and I think he's going to play a lot in what's been an injury ravaged Mariners outfield. So they're going to try and play him every day if they can. McMahon's a tough read. I mean, I like the guy a lot, but what worries me about him from the season long perspective by comparison is that I think his Coors games are going to be highly attractive, and the road games are going to be very so-so.
I think if I had one roster spot, it would have to be used on Ryan McMahon. I mean, the upside there is ridiculous. It's not just for the power. He looks like a really good player to me. A guy who's going to hit for average. Coors matters. I think if I had one spot, I would
upside?
Take... The upside? The upside is Cody Bellinger.
Oh, I don't think he's got that power ceiling, do you?
I think in Coors Field, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know what he has. Look, if you had asked me this time last year what Cody Bellinger was going to do, I wouldn't have said 40 home runs. I would have said maybe 25 homers, bats 270. Well, I could see Ryan McMahon doing that. So, and you know what? I don't want to be burned. I think I know what Mitch Haniger is. I think there is upside there, but I'm okay with taking some chances. Kyle, what do you think? Would you take Haniger, knowing what you think you know, or we don't know anything about Ryan McMahon? Who would you rather have?
I'm breaking the tie in Eric's favor here. I'll go with McMahon, and it's just that I haven't seen him fail yet. I mean, it's at this point in a 10-team standard ESPN situation, I'll gamble on the upside overtaking like what you said. We think we know what Haniger is. Give me a McMahon. If he doesn't pan out, I can pick up a guy like Haniger.
While we're on the topic of the Mariners,
he failed already in 1 year?
I don't think Haniger failed. I think he got hurt.
Yeah.
And I don't want to call him brittle yet. So... I think there's more upside.
Now we're overrating McMahon, though. I mean, this is the Kingery question from a few minutes ago. Like, my thing is, I think the McMahon case is an easy one. He's safer of these two. I love the batting average. I love the hit tool for Ryan McMahon. I think he's got that over Haniger, clearly.
Do you think Jason Worth matters in Seattle?
I think he could matter. I think he's like Adam Lind to the Yankees, where they brought him in because they need some sort of depth, because they've got Ichiro in the latter stages of his career. They've got other injured outfielders, Haniger himself with the injury history. I think that it was more that than as a starter.
I mean, left field's wide open right now with Gamel on the DL. Who's their left fielder?
Ichiro.
Ichiro's not playing every day.
He's going to play a lot.
I think on Monday... Like, we should probably do this every Thursday show. Name three guys who you didn't like you like less now than you did on the last show. I hope Ian... Well, no, I'm just trying to think, we're having, basically a show meeting during the show. I think Monday we might be saying this about Ian Desmond. If he misses a game or two this weekend because McMahon plays every day at first base, I'm all aboard the Ian Desmond train, but that might be a guy I say... Yeah. Or if Haniger comes up with a hamstring injury at any of these next three days, I'm like, I'm done. Like, that could be a guy. I mean, it's very negative. And we should do the positive, too. Like, who's a guy, if Dan Vogelbach homers twice this weekend, oh, my God, sign me up. You know, I'm like same thing, right? Because Dan Vogelbach can hit 30 home runs.
Yeah.
I really believe if he has a good April, they let him play against all right-hand pitching. I mean, Dan Vogelbach can, I don't want to say Logan Morrison because that's too many home runs, but... Why can't he do it yonder? It may not be. It may not be too many home runs. You're right.
Oh. I've said this before. I don't like Vogelbach's hit tool. I don't. I have serious questions about him from a skills perspective. But to your point, you are absolutely right about the power ceiling, and these are prove-it-to-me games. If he does have a big weekend, we've got to have that conversation Monday.
If Vogelbach hits two home runs this week, how much fab are you spending on him? The place is going to go nuts after that spring.
Yeah, you're right.
Right. Yeah. He's probably, in a 100 fab situation, that's the thing. Is it mixed or AL only? If it's a mix, I think he's going for like 20, 25.
In a general sense,
I don't think he should.
You always need context to answer that question. How much fab? I have one league with 200. I have one league with 100. I don't know what your league's fab budget is.
Let's say $100 mix, just to keep it percentage-based and standard with the mix.
How many do you have two first basemen already? Is he only your utility guy? Are your first basemen brittle, or are they Logan? Are they Goldschmidt or Logan Morrison?
Logan Morrison.
Yeah, I'm more anxious to do it if it's Logan Morrison or Cleveland's guy Alonso. It depends on who you have. It's always context driven.
If it's mixed, isn't it tough to see going to 20?
It 20% seems like a lot. And I like to save my money a little bit. You know, I saved
in a mix
it in,
especially.
I saved it in NL Labor last year, and it should have worked out. I mean, I like NL Labor right now. I don't have a backup catcher. I might waste a dollar next week, but. I'm not going high there. I mean, first of all, it's a 12-team NL. It's nothing to get anyway, but I didn't spend any money there. All right, what's next up?
All right, Mr. Hansen wants us to break down four pitchers and tell him which one is most worth stashing at the end of his roster. He's got Urena, Harvey, Junis, or Stratton.
It's stashing, you said?
Yep, at the end of his bench.
I don't think it's Urania at all. He's last, right?
Yeah, he's not a stash.
He's a streamer. I mean, I think Jake Junis could matter in like a mid, like an Alex Cobb type of way. I can see Jake Junis being that type of guy, not a huge strikeout guy. I don't know what Stratton is. Is there a fourth guy?
Harvey.
Ugh. What do you do with him?
That's a stash. That's the definition.
I think he's the definition there of a stash. It's not the other guys, right?
But the most interesting guy, Eric, I'm with you on that. I think Stratton has shown me something. He's missing bats more than I expected.
I think there's upside to be like a number four starter. With Harvey, there's obviously upside for more. But we have to look at how we think of Matt Harvey, right? I mean, that's just kind of ridiculous.
Harvey's strictly a stash. You should be putting him on your bench and absolutely under no circumstances starting him until he proves it to you. And that's probably over 2 to 3 outings. That's the definition of a stash.
I agree.
I like it. Jason saw the Vlad Jr. walk-off bomb and is wondering if he has any value in the big leagues this season, and if not, what's his dynasty value moving forward?
19 years old. Man, does he look like his father at the plate or what? That was so exciting. Even though he hit it off one of your favorite sleepers. Was that that was Jack Flaherty, right?
It was off Flaherty. Yeah.
I think it was.
Yeah, that's what
it was. A great moment. Because it happened in Montreal.
I remember Leone was in there at one point, but you're right. Yeah. It was in Montreal.
Montreal, yep.
I can't see the Blue Jays promoting him to the majors this year. Can you?
Me crazy here. He was on my bold predictions as a guy who would be up this year. I can see a scenario by which the Blue Jays are not that competitive a team and Josh Donaldson is on the trade market midseason. And then if he is moved, there's absolutely a path for Guerrero to play. If Donaldson were to miss some time later in the year, there's absolutely a path. And I think in terms of the prospect star here, it's shining bright, and I think he's got that Luis Gohara can jump several levels to the majors as early as this year. But I think I'd be shocked if it's 100-plus PAs.
I think it's September at best. By the way, he's going to be playing East Coast games in the minors soon, so you and me should meet up. They're at Trenton in like a week.
Yeah, Trenton, I heard, is next week, right?
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's talk.
Well, let's just do it during the show so everybody can hear us. All right, next.
We've got weekend plans. We've got show notes. We're just a full disclosure podcast here.
Well, I just, we turn on our machines right, on time to start
the
show.
We're an open book.
We're not like any other podcast, right, Anthony? This is very different.
Super different.
All right.
There you go. Joe, he's coming over from fantasy football and knows that stacking players is a common strategy. He wants to know what you think of the idea in baseball, especially when it comes to adding players, if you should be trying to mix and match people from the same team or try to limit your exposure to one franchise.
I don't do it with pitchers. I try to avoid it. Like, if you've got three Cleveland starting pitchers and they're really good ones, then fine. But I don't actively try to like round out the staff and add another guy. The danger, of course, and this is the biggest danger in April, is that Seattle goes to Cleveland for a 3-game series and it snows all 3 days and the series doesn't get played and you're in a head-to-head league and, Nelson Cruz, Robbie Cano, and Mitch Haniger get no at-bats. That happened to me, was it 2 years ago, where the whole series was lost?
Yep.
I remember that series. It was in Cleveland,
Indians,
right?
Mariners, the snow out, yep.
Yeah, and that's the risk with pitchers, with hitters, with anything. So I'm more apt to have multiple players from a team in baseball. I never do it in football. I mean, once in a while, I'll do Matt Ryan plus Julio Jones because I have the combination, but like I don't want their kicker and running back too. In baseball, I don't seek it out, but I don't try to avoid it. You agree?
Yeah.
Breaking news. I knew it.
Oh,
Greg Holland.
Wow. Yeah.
I was going to write that, Leo, in my article last week that Holland to the Cardinals seemed like it was so obvious because of the Gregerson injury. Gregerson shouldn't be closing anyway. I'm disappointed. If Greg Holland signs with St. Louis, I'm so disappointed that Dominic Leone, I think, could be better than Greg Holland. I really do. And part of this anger and rant is that I have Leone on a couple teams. I just spent like $7 on him in Ottawa, and I'm like, he's going to get saves. I can't believe they just gave quotes last week to the reporters there saying they were not interested in him. They don't need him. They have plenty of relievers. Tyler Lyons is really good, and he is. Man, that makes me mad.
So let's rank him. Let's do it. Where's he among relief pitchers if you're drafting today?
Not top 10. I won't put him top 10.
Not for me either. I like the skills, though.
Holland?
I like the park. Yep.
Would you take Holland or Kelvin Herrera?
Oh, Holland. I'm not a Herrera guy.
Holland or Brad Hand?
Hand.
You know what? So, like, I didn't do this with Sally Perez because I don't have good catchers on any teams. But when a player gets hurt, do you ever think to yourself, man, I know I've got him somewhere, but where? And then I looked through a couple teams. I have too many teams. And I was like, well, no, I don't have him here. And I don't have him here. It's not that sim team. It's not there. I must have this guy. And, I, you know, sometimes I just can't find it. I think that's when you know you have too many teams, right?
I had to make a whole list of mine for that, yeah.
I usually make a spreadsheet. Today when... In the past, I've made an Excel spreadsheet, but then I don't, like, follow it after 2 weeks because I've memorized like, where everybody is.
Right.
All right. I don't even remember. I'm sorry.
So I'm the new you because I'm the one who set the spreadsheet up this morning, so I knew where I had Salvador Perez. I have no shares of Luke Weaver this year. That's incredible.
Oh,
I can't believe
I've
I got shut
out. I've seen you bid
out.
On him everywhere. How do you not have him?
I love him, but I got price enforced in every spot that I had a chance.
So I have an Ottinu league with Jose Altuve and Jonathan Scope and Scott Kingery.
Wow. You got to make a trade. Let's talk.
I offered.
I actually need first base.
I offered a guy. We're not wasting anyone's time, are we? I offered a guy Jonathan Scope for Tommy Pham, thinking that's about fair. And then I looked up Pham a little bit closer and saw, oh, he's having vision issues. I don't want to go there. I don't know what I'm hoping Kingery gets, like, eligibility somewhere else soon. There's no corner spot in those leagues. There is a utility, but I have, like, two guaranteed first basemen. Like, Smoke is my utility. He could get short, but he's not going to get short anytime soon. So you were talking about something when I interrupted you on Greg Holland. I'm sorry. What was it?
Well, no. But it's important. It's big news, I think. I mean, he's a top 15 fantasy closer to me. I mean, I don't know that he's better than 15th, but...
And we should say it hasn't happened yet. It might happen
any
minute.
Yes. The stacking was the question.
Oh,
I mean, just to throw the quick pros and cons here, I think it's weakest in the head-to-head categories league. Because to your point, Eric, I think it does take you down if you have a lot of rainouts. That's actually the biggest problem. The other is, as you mentioned, the rotations. I think it's a very valuable strategy in a league that doesn't have caps or has very relaxed caps on starts where you have daily transactions. Then I might stack the Indians rotation. It's great in the daily fantasy games. Stacking, I think, is very important there. And beyond that, I don't put an awful lot of stock in it. The biggest worry is that if you lose one guy in one of these deep lineups, you take something like the Astros or the Nationals lineups, and then you lose Adam Eaton, that's a little bit of a hit, and it causes an adjustment to the rest of your roster. So you got to be prepared for that.
All right, what's next? We've got a name game to get us out of here. Ryan wants you to rank opening day with other holidays like Thanksgiving, Christmas, and the like.
Oh. Joe Mauer.
Tony Cingrani.
Matt Cain.
Captain Kryptonite.
Milk was a bad choice.
I drank a lava lamp.
Ben Zobrist.
A prospect loving something 2 years ago.
I want to be a turtle.
Jason and Saltalamacchia.
It is Anchorman, not Anchor Lady. If you could tell your mother to listen to one podcast that you produce, which one would it be?
One particular episode?
It'd be this one. Vernon Wells is going to end up in a drop.
He is going to hit 50 home runs. I was being sarcastic in the original.
And that is a scientific fact. Opening day is a lot of fun.
It sure is.
It's not like Christmas. Christmas to me is
Well, let's try it. Name game it.
All right, so I'll ask you. Christmas versus opening day.
Christmas.
All right.
Somebody here probably likes Christmas a lot, and I have no idea why.
I love Christmas.
Sure you do. Holiday?
It's someone's birthday.
I wonder who that is.
All right, well, how about opening day
Let's
versus...
make it a national holiday.
Easter. Obviously, I'm not getting into religion on all this stuff, but I mean, religion, Easter versus opening day. I mean, you can have a big ham today.
As you said, I'm not a ham guy.
You're a ham, though. You know what I did last year on opening day? And I even tweeted it out. Remember, I made myself two hot dogs. And I made a whole package of pigs in a blanket.
Nice.
And then I tweeted out the photo. And, I might do that again. Although I think I have to throw them out because we lost power for 3 days. All right, let's ask the other guys. Leo, and this is probably not playing the name game the right way. Rank your top holidays with opening day in it as one of them. Pretend it's a holiday.
Well, like you kind of said, at some point you can eat like a turkey or a ham any day. Opening day only happens once. So I'm actually going to go off the board too, and I'm going to say like the first weekend of the NCAA tournament.
Oh, yeah, that Thursday and Friday.
Then opening day, yeah. Wow. Then Thanksgiving, ooh, then Christmas. Oh.
Dagger to my heart.
Yeah, you went with that over opening day. You know what? I mean, I know I'm the host of a show, but I kind of agree. The first 2 days of the tournament are fantastic. And today, half the games are already rained out. I'm going with Leo here. I'm going with Leo. And by the way, half these holidays are a joke. Like Valentine's Day, Halloween. Come on.
Halloween's great.
Halloween's not
great. I love Halloween.
Halloween is bottom tier.
It's awful.
Thanksgiving's bottom.
No, I like Thanksgiving.
No, Thanksgiving's the best.
Thanksgiving is one of the most overrated holidays. I love what it means for family and depends on your family. I'll tell you this: it is the Jason Hayward of holidays.
Oh man, that's tough.
There's so many expectations.
All right, Thanksgiving versus Arbor Day. Short. Which do you take?
Well, I'll take Thanksgiving there because it's got the fantastic food, and you do get to see your family. But again, the expectations are so super high for Thanksgiving.
So, Kyle, Leo and I both said we would prefer the first 2 days of the tournament to opening day in baseball. Do you agree?
I do. I'm going to extend it to the weekend now. Give me the first 4 days.
Yeah, the whole weekend is insane. A holiday, man. It's
you can have a day. It's a day. It's not a weekend. Well, it's a day.
A single day.
Kristen, then it's Thursday.
April 2nd, which is National Peanut Butter and Jelly Day, really has to draw some consideration here.
Ooh, yuck.
No, it doesn't.
No peanut butter and jelly on this show.
Yikes. I mean, I'll see myself out.
It's Thursday. It needs to be a Monday. What? I don't know. Thursday is weird.
We've got the two rainouts, okay. But, I mean, the fact that we could have had 30 teams playing in one day was awesome.
Lots of day games. It's a great day. It is a great day. Opening day of baseball. Doesn't have to be the best day. Look, we're all dressed up crazy, like, for our favorite teams, and we're all excited. I don't want to leave on a dour note. It's fun. It's awesome.
What's the Ryan McMahon of days? The like, really under the radar, like, but super awesome. No, really.
The day after Thanksgiving, when everybody leaves.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, yeah. And you have all that awesome food left.
Well, that's also good because it's Black Friday and there's a lot of great values, and Ryan McMahon is a great value.
Nobody in my family listens to this show.
Fantasy baseball.
I love Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve is fun, yeah. New Year's Eve stinks. I don't like New Year's Eve. I mean, when I was young, I did. All right, we're wasting time now. We have to go. Is there anything else anybody wants to say?
I'm going
to
throw in their 4th of July.
That's fun. That's a good day.
Yeah, it is.
It's a good day.
Barbecue.
Just be very careful with the fireworks. All right. Well, we hope we've given you some good information here. The games have started. Hopefully your teams do well. Remember, it's an 11-day week in ESPN Fantasy. Not every site is doing it that way. That's how we're doing it. Don't blame us. That's how it is. I don't have a problem with it. But, you know, continue to look for free agents and trades. And please try not to overreact. By the way, you can catch me on Saturday afternoon. I'll be hosting the MLB preview special on ESPN Radio between 12 and 3. Buster will only be on as well. Tristan, any final thoughts?
Check the forecaster for your updates on
that's stuff. Right.
I'll tell you this. We have new rolling pitching and hitting grids, which will give you ratings for the upcoming 10 days, and that will be the case every single day of the year.
Best piece of content on ESPN Fantasy is Tristan's forecaster. Certainly better than anything I'm doing. Check it out. It is awesome. And even though the week has already started, check it out anyway. All right. That is it for the whole gang here. For Soppy and Howell and Kalata Ute and Cockroft, I am Caraba. Please have an awesome weekend. We'll be back on Monday. Everything is
awesome. Best day of the year.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at espnradio.com.